This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, and from Nashville, Tennessee, I'm your host, Gary Holt. We have a tremendous show scheduled for today. I think we've got guests. I know we have guests that are going to be very informative as well as entertaining. And let me tell you who we have joining us today. Our first guest will be Dr. Rebecca Jimenez. Rebecca is very active in various equine organizations, especially in disaster preparedness, and so she'll have a lot to share with us today in the first segment of the show. And then we'll travel to Black, Missouri to talk with a good friend, and that is Joanne Becker of Brushy Creek Lodge and Resort in Black, Missouri. We remind you that the Saddle Up America program is made possible by our great sponsors at the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that just love the Western and equestrian lifestyle in the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. And by TrailGuard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. TrailGuard was founded with one mission in mind, and that is guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more about TrailGuard today at trailguard.org. So grab a cup of coffee. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Rebecca Jimenez. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Wildcat Kelly, looking mighty pale, was standing by the sheriff's side. And when that sheriff said, "I'm sending you to jail," Wildcat raised his head and cried, "Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. I want to be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood tree. Send me off forever, but I ask you please. Don't fence me in, just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences. Gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in."
Techniques across the United States and internationally. She also is a widely in-demand speaker talking on the subjects of technical large animal emergency rescue and related subjects. So let's welcome to the show today Rebecca Jimenez. Rebecca, how are you?
Oh, good morning. How are you? Well, I guess it's good afternoon for most of you listeners.
Well, it just barely is, and if you're out in California, it's still about 10 o'clock, just a little after, so.
Listening to the song, Gary, and I was sort of snickering to myself because we all want to say heck with the fences, but, you know, it's interesting to me how many fences affect our lives with our horses. We see a lot of emergencies that happen because of horses and their impact with fences. And I was just finding that very ironic that you played that song.
Well, fences are a good thing, and they can be a dangerous thing too. And that would be a great subject for a show, just to talk about the proper type of fencing to have in place. But we have a lot to talk about. You sent me a lot of information yesterday, and great, great information. It was like, gee whiz, where do we start with this? So I'll tell you where I want to start, and that is to introduce you to our audience and just a real quick background on you and horses.
Oh, Gary, I've had horses my whole life. I've been very, very fortunate. My parents had horses, and they introduced me to horses. When I was a child, we were sort of young and dumb about horses. We just rode them and fed them and didn't know anything. And then I grew up and thought I knew everything. I guess that happens to everybody. And then about 20-something, I started looking around at about 25, and I said, man, there's all these classes in to educate myself in actual horses. So I ended up getting a PhD in animal physiology with a concentration in reproductive endocrinology in horses at Clemson University. And I was very interested along the way in looking at behavior of horses and how, you know, of course, everybody has the dream of being able to get your horse to come to you when you call them and those kind of things. So I was looking at some of the behavior things and how to communicate with horses a little bit more of the natural horsemanship kind of thing. And
right.
My major advisor at school said, hey, since your horses, you've taught them to lay down, is there any possible way that we could tie some straps around them and pull them around on the ground or hang them up from some slings? And I said, what? So he and I started trying to figure out ways to manipulate animals in some pretty horrific situations, such as some of your listeners might run into. If you're out on a trail ride and God forbid something happens, like you're going across a bridge and the bridge fails, or I think it's probably happened to everybody that's a serious trail rider, you're riding along a trail that seems to be pretty good and it gets really slippery either because of the rain or because of some other problem and your horse slips down. And if he ends up upside down or something like that, how can you out there on the trail do something about it? And that's what we started looking into. And then, of course, over the years, it's grown. And now we talk about disaster preparedness and we talk about how to coordinate with fire departments and veterinarians and animal control officers in various jurisdictions to find a better way to get a response that's going to actually save our patient. But I'm sure some of the folks in your listening are going to be interested in what they can do when they're out there on the trail.
Well, they will, and we have a lot of listeners too, Rebecca. Well, all across the United States, and in about 60 different countries as well. So that's pretty cool. One of the things, and I was just kind of looking at some of the notes that I had. There are a couple of disasters that happen with horses that are the most common that you mentioned, and one of those is fire, and the other were trailer wrecks, and I'm sure we've all experienced or have friends that have experienced things with trailers, but right now we've got the big fire problems that are going out in the West, just devastating property and people's lives and of course displacing their livestock. But there was a question that popped up in my mind, and I'd really never thought about this, because back here in Tennessee we have tornadoes. So we don't have the fires, we don't have the mudslides. We do have sinkholes and some things like that. But the question that popped up in my mind was, when something happens like that, who do you contact? And there was in some of the material that you sent to me, I didn't realize this, but animal technical rescue is part of the emergency management system, and I never thought about that.
Yes, sir, it is. In some jurisdictions and some counties and states, they have taken it very seriously, and they have gotten training for their folks and some equipment. Sometimes it's just something as simple as a piece of webbing and some know-how on how to do a manipulation. In some places, for example, I know the next guest speaker is going to be from Missouri. They have a team out there called MERS. They're very proactive and very involved in their state, and they actually have a response trailer with a whole bunch of equipment on it. But the thing to think about is if you are on the side of the road in the interstate and you have a wreck or your horses are affected in some way, it's not really possible for someone on the other side of the state to get to you in time. So it comes down to people getting involved in their local community with their local fire departments and their local veterinarians and asking the question, hey, do we have these kinds of response capabilities in our county or our city or our jurisdiction? And if not, why not? And how can we do that? And how can we get some of our folks some training and take a look at some of the situations that might be very easy to fix? And some of this, Gary, has come out of the fact that we have changed so significantly as a society. Used to be that we were a very agrarian, agricultural society, and everybody had animals, and everybody knew how to handle animals, but that's not
right.
true these days.
That's
and
right.
The thing I always scare horse people with is your average firefighter that you call to help you with the trailer wreck on the side of the road probably has never touched a horse in his whole life. Or maybe he touched one on a dude ranch ride, which we know is not the same, and maybe
right.
he rode on a carousel, but that's it.
That's all right.
So,
that's right.
You know, that becomes a little bit frustrating, and it's very challenging on scene, and it's not their fault. It's just the way that where they were raised in an effect of our society. But trying to get people to understand that they can prepare for some of these emergencies with just some simple planning, particularly since you were talking about wildfires, what is your plan for a wildfire?
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is if you have a plan for a wildfire, or in your case, what are you going to do after a tornado? If a tornado actually hit you, who are you going to call? Where are you going to move your horses to? What is the phone number for your veterinarian in case, Gary, you're out of town? You know, what happens
mm-hmm.
if a tornado hits your farm when you're out of town? Who's going to respond? Who knows your veterinarian? Who can everybody always calls me Dr. Death, but I tell them, who can authorize my animals to be euthanized if they are horrifically injured? I want to know that someone's going to do the right thing and call the veterinarian and have them euthanized.
Right.
That's part of the planning process, that those of us that are in the emergency and disaster realm, we're always talking about those things, but most people don't want to think about it because it sounds awful. But if you have a plan for evacuation, or if you have a plan for what we call shelter in place, and that's usually what you have to do for a tornado, it's amazing how your shelter in place plan is going to be very similar for a blizzard. It's going to be very similar for a flood. It's going to be very similar for a wildfire if you choose to stay in place. Now,
mm-hmm.
obviously, the folks that have been affected out in California and Idaho and Washington lately with the fires, most of the time those kind of fires are not survivable for a shelter-in-place situation. And
right.
thus, they have to get out. And I think some of the things that are coming out already from the after-action reviews that the veterinarians and the firefighters have been conducting is, if you have livestock and horses, you have to get out early, not waiting till you get told to leave. You need to be looking at the various apps that are out there and the warnings and say, hey, if, for example, it comes down to a little simple math. If I have four horses and I have a two-horse trailer, it's going to take me two trips. So I've got to get all my two horses loaded, take them wherever they're going to go, unload them, coordinate for them, and then go back and get the other two. And unfortunately, in many of those cases, they go out with the first two and they can't come back because the fire's already moved too fast. So as horse people, we need to understand that this is a fundamental part of our responsibility to our animals, is coming up with a evacuation plan and a shelter-in-place plan that will work for us. Even if we're not there, if it's our kids implementing the plan, or our parents or our neighbors, who knows our plan? Who can do the right thing to make sure that our animals are taken care of?
Well, and that is so true. And as you were talking about that, I was thinking about the fact, I think most states, I know Tennessee does, they have recommendations for people to have an emergency kit and to have a preparedness checklist for themselves. And I'll just bet you that 95% of the folks don't have that. But
that is true.
Yeah, yeah.
That is very, so, I mean, it is very frustrating to FEMA because they have been saying, you know, come up with an emergency kit forever, and everybody says, "Oh yeah, I've got an emergency kit." And when I walk into their house, I say, "Show it to me," because it's put up or shut up, and they can't show it to me. They don't really have a plan. They think they have a plan, and they don't realize that when you are actually affected by, God forbid, a tornado, because those are some of the scariest things that can happen because they're so quick, or an earthquake. When it happens, you don't have time to be putting a kit together. You need to be able to grab your go bag and walk out the door.
That's right. That's right. Well, so that's one thing that needs to be done. People need to have their plan and their preparedness kit for themselves in place, and then to do the same thing for their animals. And unfortunately, a lot of times we don't know our neighbors, or we don't know the folks that could come in and help us, and probably need to make sure we do that. That point that you made about the fact that I've got four horses, but I can only move two because I have a two-horse trailer, probably hits home to way too many people. And it certainly has me in the past, where I had 30 horses and, you know, a two-horse trailer. So I'd be in bad luck.
A lot of what has really flavored my preparation attitudes has been traveling to other places around the world that have serious disasters more often than we do, and Australia is one of them. I've gone over there four times, and they really take disaster preparedness very seriously, because when they have wildfires there, their trees are 120 to 140 feet tall. They actually induce the fire because those eucalyptus trees shed their bark on purpose to try to feed the fire, and their normal temperatures can be 130, 140 degrees every day. Sometimes they don't get rain for years. And so when their fires start to move, their fires sometimes move at 70 miles an hour. And those people realize that it's very dangerous. So when you meet people in Australia, they think nothing of when they come home at work from work at night, they hitch their truck to their trailer in fire season every day. Because they know they may have to move, and they have it fueled all the time. You know, how many people do you meet, Gary, that always have to stop and fuel their truck because they keep it down to quarter tank?
Yeah.
I never let my tank get lower than quarter tank. It's not going to happen to me.
Yeah. Well, I've always said, you know, it doesn't cost any more to put a half a tank of gas in, and if you have a half a tank, then a half a tank more is a full tank. And so, you know, just keep it there, and it doesn't cost any more, you know.
That's exactly right.
Well, I want to take a quick break and acknowledge one of our sponsors. When we come back, Rebecca, I'd like to talk a little bit more about a checklist for horse owners and what they need to do, and also how they can get some involvement in the community so that there's some preparedness in place instead of waiting until it happens. And then you mentioned there were some things that we could do to help with some of those disasters that are the most common, and that's fire and trailer wrecks. And so let's talk about that when we come back.
Yes, sir.
All righty. But right now, let's acknowledge TrailGuard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. TrailGuard offers unlimited vehicle towing to a dealership that services your make vehicle, a second tow vehicle to get your trailer and horses home or to your destination, 24-hour coverage for you and the vehicle that you own or one you're driving or anyone driving your vehicle, and a 24-hour personal assistant to help you plan your trip, and much, much more. TrailGuard was founded with one mission in mind, and that's guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more about TrailGuard today by visiting their website at trailguard.org. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Rebecca Jimenez.
Horses in life, it's all the same to me. The reason that my heart keeps beating inside.
like the air I breathe. This love will be in me till the day that I die.
And that's why I hope people are listening. But, Rebecca, we were talking about a couple of the more common challenges that people have, and one are trailer wrecks. And I'll just tell you now, back in the day, we didn't have a horse trailer. We had a pickup truck. And I remember two different occasions with my dad. And both times he was either going to a breeding farm with a mare, and crossed a bridge, and as he got about halfway across that bridge, the mare reared up and those front feet were over the top of the truck on there, and this was, at that time it was a pretty narrow bridge, you know, so it was, and a long one. Fortunately, she got down by herself. But the second time, he was coming back from bringing a mare back from a breeding farm, and was on a town square as he was coming back through, and the horse's front feet fell through the bed of the truck. Okay, so that may lead us right into talking about trailer wrecks and what people can do as far as that's concerned.
Things haven't changed much. A lot of the things that people, you know, get sick and tired of hearing me talk about is maintenance. And I know that over 70% of our audience is female, and I'm going to just admit that most women don't know a lot about trailer construction and trailer maintenance. And when you say, hey, have you packed your bearings, they probably look at you funny. And if you say, hey, are you lubricating your balls, they're really going to look at you funny. But if you don't know better, there's a couple of resources. First of all, Neva Chevy has a book out there about the complete guide to maintenance and servicing your horse trailer. And it's fantastic. I consider it the Bible. And if you're not interested in actually doing that and you've got more money than you've got time, then find someone that can annually look at your trailer and go over it from the very tip of the hitch to the back of the trailer lights. Make sure that there's plenty of reflective. Make sure your lights work. Make sure your brakes work. Make sure your hitch is appropriate. Do you need to replace the ball and or the receiver on your truck. All those things, people say, well, that's a lot of money. And I go, it is cheap compared to having to look at your horse on the side of the road, either has gone through the floor or has jumped over something or stuck his foot through something that wasn't appropriate, and have them take a look at that trailer with a very critical eye, because that is the cheapest insurance you'll ever spend, is having someone that knows what they're doing look at your trailer and ensure that it is safe for your horse. It amazes me when I go to various horse shows and rodeos and events, and I walk around the parking lot and look at people's trailers, and I usually leave a nasty note. Well, I try not to leave a nasty note, but I leave a note on their windshield and say, you need to get your hitch looked at, or you've got some challenges with your trailer, because people really don't know. They don't lock
yeah.
the pin. They don't have an appropriate pin. So preventing the incident from the horse's perspective is very important. But then again, the other thing you've got to think about is the other people that are on the road with you, because there's some unimaginable number of people each year that deal with the trailer coming unhitched from the truck. And, of course, they always make excuses. You know, my husband hitched it, whatever. But that can not only get your horse killed, it can get you killed. And if it comes loose from your trailer, it's not appropriately attached, and it goes across the interstate and kills someone else, you are, first of all, going to go to jail. Second of all, you're going to live the rest of your life knowing that you got somebody else injured or killed, and that is unconscionable. So it is impingent upon us. You have the responsibility to make sure that your trailer is in good, serviceable condition. And I will, just hazarding a guess, looking at the trailers that I see, over 50% of them, just at, even that are being used at various shows and rodeos, 50% have a major problem with something that I'm looking at. Their lights don't work. They don't have the attachment to the safety brakes. They don't have appropriate chains. Take it somewhere, spend the money, have the maintenance done, make sure it works, make sure that your trailer is going to stay attached to your vehicle, and prevent those accidents in the first place. But,
well,
Gary, if you end up in the situation of having a wreck with your horses, the first thing you should do is call 911 and get someone there, because it's not about the horses at that point. It's about people safety. And they will come and they will block the road. They will assist you with trying to assist the horse. They will make sure that the people involved are safe. And the second call you should make is to a veterinarian. And that's easy to say when you're close to home. But if I'm driving between here and Oklahoma, that's very difficult to do. I actually have to do some previous coordination. And I can probably call Trail Guard and get them to assist me with trying to find a veterinarian too. But you got to have a plan for what you're going to do if you actually do have something go wrong.
That's right. That's right. Well, not only the trailer maintenance and the checklist on that, but make sure that the tow vehicle that you're using is appropriate, and that the brakes are working and the lights are working and everything else, because that, you know.
You can tow it with a bicycle, but you can't stop it.
That's right. That's right. That is right. But we just see that all the time, where people are en route somewhere and they've had challenges with brake linings going out, or something that's gone wrong with their vehicle, or they've had tires that have been blown, and that can cause both on the tow vehicle and the trailer, and can cause some real serious problems. Those are pretty simple things to address in advance and save lives and save your horse and
yes,
in the
sir.
Long run,
and
save a lot of money.
People look at me funny. I tell them the number of nuts that you have on your wheels matter. And they go, what do you mean? And I say, if you've only got 5 lugs on your wheels, you probably have the cheapest wheel and the cheapest tires and the cheapest axles that are made out there. And some of our trailer manufacturers are fantastic, but some of them do take cheap shortcuts. So,
yeah.
For example, on my trailers, I have 8 lugs, and I have the more expensive, heavier-duty axles, and I have load-range G tires, and they're 100, 200 and something bucks a piece and 110 pounds of pressure. But guess what? You spend the extra money on the higher-quality tires, wheels, and axles that my precious children are riding on. I consider them my children. four-legged children.
Right.
And guess what? I don't have to deal with broken down tires, broken down on the side of the road, changing tires on the side of the road, those kind of things nearly as often as I did when I had the cheaper trailers and the cheaper equipment.
Right.
You're exactly right.
Well, those are pretty easy things to address, maybe not inexpensive, but in the long run, it's a cheaper fix for those things.
If you talk to the people that actually keep up with this kind of stuff, it's like I guarantee you, if you talk to the folks at Trail Guard, they probably keep the statistics. And I've talked to some of the folks at the National Highway Safety Transportation Boards and those kind of things, and they'll tell you that a lot of the wrecks that occur because a tire blew, and particularly if it's on the steering axle on the front of your truck. It's really hard to recover with that much weight behind you.
Yeah. Well, and then quickly, we're running out of time. I mean, there's so much. Rebecca, you're going to have to come back. I mean, there's just too much more for us to talk about. But let's talk just real quickly, real briefly about fires. And I guess the area that we would address here is for horse barns and facilities.
Yes, sir. So what I encourage people to do is go find your local fire department. They are not going to charge you anything. They would love to come out to your facility and help you come up with a better plan for how you're going to respond to barn fires. They're going to look for your fire extinguishers. They're going to help you realize what is really dangerous for you and for your horses in your barns. They're probably going to say some things that you aren't going to like to hear, like you really shouldn't be putting hay up above your horses, which is a typical place for people to put them. But we look at it as fuel that's just going to add to the flames. The average barn fire is fully involved within 5 to 7 minutes. The average recall time for a local fire department is 5 to 7 minutes. And most of them, when I talk to them, tell me, yes, I've gone numerous barn fires and there was nothing living by the time we got there. So it is incumbent upon us as horse owners to get together with the fire department ahead of time. Let them tell you the kinds of things that you can do to improve their response time to you, as well as what they're going to do when you actually get there. And if you are the owner and you live on the facility and you actually end up having a fire alarm go off in your barn because you have hired an appropriate company to come out and put in the kinds of fire alarms that it takes, you don't get them for $4.99 at the local Lowe's or Home Depot, I promise you.
Right.
That you can respond and you can do it effectively. And probably the simplest way for most barn owners to be able to respond to a fire is add a second door to your horse's stall, a stall to the outside wall, so that you actually have a tinker's dam chance of actually getting your horse out.
Because that's a great point.
When the fire department gets there, they're not going to let you run down the interior aisle. It's too dangerous. Most of the construction, lightweight wood construction that we use for barns these days, means that it's going to implode to the center aisle and it's going to get somebody killed. So if you have a stall door to the outside, that is really the ultimate answer, and have done some practice, because when you actually practice trying to evacuate a barn full of horses under even simulated conditions, it takes a lot longer than most people think. We did it at my local barn with a riding instructor. And we sent some fire department members into her barn. We smoked it up with fake fog, like Halloween smoke. And it took them 12 minutes to catch the first horse. And she was in tears, and she said, I can't believe it takes that long to catch a horse. And I said, well, Darth Vader himself just walked into the barn. It's in a smoky condition. They're hearing all kinds of weird sounds, and they're supposed to let Darth Vader walk up and put a halter on their head. There's no way. So those are some of the reality things that we see in these situations, and I encourage people to really get with your local fire department. They have the expertise to come out to your place, and they would much rather talk to you ahead of time, make some suggestions. They're not going to give you a tax. They're not going to fine you. They want to help, and they would much rather do that than they would to come hold your hand and watch your barn burn to the ground.
Wow. Well, those are all good points, and I was just sitting here thinking, too, you know, everybody needs to have a couple of fire extinguishers in their barn, at least, if they don't have them.
10 pounders. And that's the other thing, you know, on fire extinguishers, for your saddle club or your 4-H or your pony club, whatever you do, have your local fire department come out, and they'll actually let you practice using a fire extinguisher, because actually my fire department just had training last night for 2 hours on how to use a fire extinguisher. And you're thinking, how crazy is that? it's actually more difficult to do than you think.
I could imagine. I don't think I've ever used one, but I could see where that could be
exactly
the case.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many people think they know how to use something, but they don't know actually how to use it. So call your fire department and tell them, I want to know. I've got some kids out here. We want to teach them how to use a fire extinguisher properly. And some, like last night, we actually lit up a half 55-gallon barrel full of kerosene and just pulled out fire extinguishers and learned how to use a proper fire extinguisher.
Wow. Well, there is so much to talk with you about. We haven't even scratched the surface on this. And will you come back and be with us again?
I certainly will. I really appreciate you having me on the show today, Gary.
Well, I appreciate you being with us. And tell us the website where they can go visit you and also your Facebook page.
Yes, sir. If you spell out Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue on the Facebook group, and then we'll approve you to join the group. There's about 7,000 people around the world that get involved in that. Or you can go to www.tlaer.org, and that also will have a link to the Facebook page.
All right. Well, a lot of great information there, and just so much we did not get to, so we look forward to having you back with us again.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Gary.
Well, thanks, Rebecca. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be traveling to Black, Missouri to talk with Joanne Becker and talk a little bit about their 21st annual fall trail ride that's coming up. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Punching with floor took out with his strength to give the wild ones a go. 200 or more on that vast valley floor, an ocean of horse flesh on a sage and pinion shore. From the deserts of Nevada to old Mexico, you could bankroll a fortune if you didn't move too slow. Saddle up at sunrise for 5 good men. Swing that wayline tight fast at the end. Feel the thunder of the hooves and the whine of the wind. We were wild, we were young, and our lives had just begun. We were thrown in time, we were dreaming and trying. In the summer of our lives, we were wild Mustang riding. We were chasing down the sun. Mustangs and God bless the runners. The hunted were as wily as we who were the hunters. It's all action and steel and a little of luck in catching the good ones with a snort and a buck. Two ropes sing out over that Palomino's head. That hoss still moving full speed ahead. There ain't nothing we'd rather be doing instead. We were wild, we were young, our lives had just begun. We were grown and tan, we were dreaming and trying. In the summer of our lives, we were wild Mustang running. We were chasing down the sun. Wee dee dee, yodel dud. Wee dee dee, yodel dud. Think of those old glory days, all of the heartbeats I lost or I gained. My heart is at peace, there ain't nothing I'd change. Just me and those Mustangs on that wide open range. Saddle up at sunrise for 5 good men. Swing that whale on tie fast at the end. Feel the thunder of the hooves and the wild. ride. In the summer of our lives, we were wild Mustang riding. We were chasing down the sun.
Mary Kay, Chasing Down the Sun, and I hope that we are chasing down the sun this weekend because it is wet here in Nashville today. But we're talking with Joanne Becker now in Black, Missouri. And Joanne, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Gary. I appreciate it.
How's your weather?
Today it's cloudy, but it's supposed to be a beautiful weekend. It'll be in the 60s from tomorrow through the weekend, and you know, down the mid-40s at night, so it's perfect riding weather.
It absolutely is. Fall is my favorite time of the year to get out and ride. Yeah, I love the fall weather, and it is supposed to be beautiful and sunny after we get through this little rainy spell we're having down here today, so it's going to be a beautiful weekend. But got a lot of folks that may have – you've been a great guest. I mean, we love talking about Brushy Creek. And we love talking about Valley Springs Foxtrotters and all of the things that you have going on up there. But for folks that maybe have joined us to hear you for the first time, let's tell folks, first of all, exactly where Brushy Creek Lodge and Resort is located, and then talk a little bit about your great facilities there.
Okay, it's located in the Martway National Forest in southeast Missouri. About 100 miles south of southwest of St. Louis. We have beautiful country. It is kind of in the middle of nowhere, but it's beautiful country and beautiful riding.
Well, being in the middle of nowhere, I think, is where most of us would like to be. That is a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yes.
But tell us a little bit about your facilities there, because you've got everything from campsites to great restaurants to a lot of stuff for people to see and do. So tell us a little bit about the facilities there.
Well, we're on about 350 acres as far as the Brushy Creek and the Foxtrotters goes. It's on about 300 acre property, and then we have 40 electric, water and electric sites down at Brushy Creek, and we have 90-something stalls for people to rent to bring their own horse. We do have a really nice restaurant where you can either, you know, make your own food in your camper, or you can come and eat with us. We serve breakfast and dinner for our guests, and we also have a room in the back that we call the Don Wayne Room, which is open 24 hours a day. It's a big room. There's a pool table and ping pong and a TV and card tables and stuff. And there is Wi-Fi there where people can go and relax in the evening if they don't want to sit around the campfire or, you know, be up at the cabins. We also have 4 cabins available for rent. We also have a Faulkner Homestead, which is actually 3 miles up the road. It's in the middle of another 300-acre parcel that we have, and that's where we keep a lot of our brood mares and our young stock. But we do have a real nice old farmhouse that we fixed up, and it does sleep 16. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's nice. It's really nice. It's great for family reunions. We've had several people either coming for a Thanksgiving with their family, or, you know, we've had it rented several times for, you know, 10 to 15 women that come and want to go trail riding. You can catch the trails right from that farm. So it's really nice. It's real nice. In our campsites, we try to spread them out there in 2 different areas on the property so they're not all, you know, hovered together. And then we have real nice area for primitive, and we can make as many primitive sites as anybody needs. So it's a nice area.
Come on, come all.
That's right.
There's room for everybody.
Yes, yeah, there is.
Well, tell us a little bit about the restaurant. What type of meals do you serve there?
Well, we have a variety, but it's pretty much it's home style cooking. And normally on a Friday night we'll have the catfish, all you can eat catfish, shrimp, chicken strips if, you know, someone doesn't want the fried foods and they'd rather have, you know, a grilled chicken breast or something. That's great. But we have a really, really good salad bar that a lot of people just like to eat the salad bar. So that's normally on a Friday night. Saturday, we're always barbecuing something, whether it's brisket or pork loin or ribs or something like that. And the other nights, we'll have country fried steak and mashed potatoes and gravy, you know, or we'll have chicken breast. We'll make a Mexican dish meal, and then we'll also have an Italian food. So we're very flexible. We're not set in stone. Friday and Saturday we pretty well are. The rest of the time sometimes we have requests and we can just about make whatever anybody wants. But people love our food. There's a lot of it, and it's very fresh. So we get lots of compliments on our restaurant.
Well, I knew you did, and it's past lunchtime here in Tennessee, so I'm getting a little bit hungry. So that just... All of it sounded good. Well, talk to us a little bit about the trails that you have out there.
We have a lot of beautiful trails. We have a lot. We have over 130 miles of riding trails here. The Ozark Trail goes actually directly through our property. And then we have a outfitter's license with the Mark Twain National Forest, so we were able to put a lot of our own trails in also. So we actually have more miles than that. If the Ozark Trail actually starts around the St. Louis area, and it actually will end up in Arkansas. There is a one spot that isn't open yet, and that's the Peck Ranch, and they're working on that right now to be able to ride through that. So lots and lots of riding. It's very few times that you're ever going to even find if we don't have an organized ride. We're open year-round, so we have very good maps, and you can take a map and, you know, you can be gone for a couple hours to all day to pack out overnight if you want. But we have a very good map system, and so you can ride, you know, as long as you want or as short as you want. It just kind of depends what everybody else's, you know, needs are. But the trails are marked good. We have probably 8 different trails that leave Brushy Creek. At one time, you can go on one side of the highway or the other side of the highway. They are rocky, especially right when you leave our facility. So we do recommend shoes. Some people wear boots, but we definitely recommend shoes. It's rocky, and then once you get out a little bit further, it's not near as rocky, and it's, you know, a lot of dirt. We do have a few roads, but most all of our trails are our trails here. There's very few that you might have to cross, you know, little gravel county roads or something, but most of the trail riding here is all actually in the woods and they're on trails.
Well, when people talk to me about 130 miles of trails or so, I don't think you can come stay somewhere for a week and ride all 130 miles, can you?
No, you really can't. But it's amazing that the people that have come for several years didn't even know some of these other trails existed. So it's kind of spread out. We've got a farm that's about 8.5 miles from here that you can ride to the farm, and it's a beautiful location, and you don't have to come back the same way you went out, and all those things are nice. We have a lot of loops around to where you never have to turn around and come back the same trail that you leave on, and anyone that has any experience with horses coming back to the barn, that's really a good thing. You know, you can make some circles. Most of all of our trails are circle trails, so you know, you're not coming back the same way that you go out.
Okay.
But we have lots of trails. We keep our trails up. We keep them weed eated, and we keep them the washouts fixed, and all of that. So we're proud of that.
Well, it is a beautiful facility, and we're going to give your website in just a little bit so people can go and take a look actually see some of the trails. And you've been featured by Best of America, I think, once or twice. And,
yes,
yeah, and, you know, old Tom doesn't go to unnice campgrounds, if that's a word. He likes to go to great places. So
right,
beautiful,
that's right.
beautiful facility. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up this weekend. Can you believe it's already the 1st of October?
No, I cannot.
This
year has gone by very quick.
It has. But we're gonna talk about what's going on with the 21st annual Fall Ride at Brushy Creek when we come back. And you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. We'll talk more with Joanne Becker, so don't go away.
I was born to roam. I never had a place to call my own. Saddle up and go. Yeah, go. Well, saddle my pony, believe I'm gonna hit the road. But this big city been closing in. Baby, just look at the shape I'm in. Saddle up and go. Yeah, go. Saddle my pony, believe I'm gonna hit the road. Pack my duffel in the middle of the night. When things get heavy, I'm traveling light. Saddle up and go. Yeah, go. Well, saddle my pony, believe I'm gonna hit the road. Go ahead, John. Drink from your loving cup. You tell me settle down, make me wanna saddle up and go. Yeah, go.
Here we go.
Saddle my pony, believe I'm gonna hit the road. Out with the woman, having some fun. And in walked a man with a great big gun. Saddle up and go. Yeah, go. Well, saddle my pony, I believe I'm gonna hit the road. Coming, baby, better run and hide. If I get you in my saddle, we're going for a ride. Saddle up and go. Yeah, go. Well, saddle my pony, I'm even gonna hit the road. Got a gal in Memphis, one in Kalamazoo, one in Dodge City, one in East St. Louis. Winslow, Barstow, Buffalo, Kokomo, Catalina, Pasadena, see what I mean. I got a saddle my pony, man, I gotta hit the road. Let's head on out.
The Harmonic Cowboy, and that's Saddle My Pony, which is exactly what people are going to be doing up at Brushy Creek this weekend. And Joanne, 21 years.
Yes.
21 years for this fall ride.
Yes, it is.
So
and
you were like 12 when you started this.
No, I wish I was 12, but no.
Gosh.
You know, it's
well,
neat, though, Gary. We have people here that have been on all 21 rides.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a homecoming and a reunion for a lot of the people that have been coming for a long time with us. So it's really fun.
Oh, that's great. Now, how long has Brushy Creek been in existence?
We've had Brushy Creek since 1997. But okay. We've had the Fox Trotter Barn, and we actually, before we built Brushy Creek, we started this trail ride with the Fox Trotter Barn with customers that, you know, maybe bought a horse from us or did breeding with us or we trained their horse. And we started out just doing an annual ride with the people that used to come here. And then when we built Brushy Creek, then that's when we opened it up and we had just so much many more people. And so we've been doing it for 21 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, tell us what's going to be going on this weekend up there.
Actually, we already have people here for the ride already, and they're just riding on their own and, you know, eating meals and whatever. And then Thursday we start with the trail ride, and then we'll have a cattle sorting in the afternoon, which is a lot of fun. And then we have music with Hunter Halfcoat is going to be playing in the dinner hour, and then. And that's in the John Wayne room. We have music. And then on Friday, of course, everybody eats breakfast. And then we have a poker run. And it's about a 2.5 hour trail ride. And there's 5 obstacles along that 2.5 hour trail ride where they get a card. And then they do not open their cards until Friday evening after dinner. And then we see who has the best hand. So it's a lot of fun. We usually have... you know, anywhere from 60 to 100 people on that poker run.
Oh, wow.
They really enjoy that, I think, out of all the things we do. Cattle sorting is a lot of fun, but a lot of people don't think their horse can do it. But once they know that we're all just out there having a good time and it's no competition, then a lot of people will try it and they realize that their horse can do that. So that's a lot of fun. But Friday we have the poker run, and then we do a trail ride on Saturday afternoon, and then our Friday afternoon, and then Friday evening, we have a challenge course competition. We have a challenge course here for horses, and we have about 25 different obstacles that they need to go through, and then we judge them. And then again, Friday night after dinner is when we give the awards for the best hand at the poker run or the cattle sorting on Thursday, and the challenge course on Friday. And then we have, after dinner, we have karaoke in the John Wayne room, which is always a lot of fun. We have some really good people that come and do that. And then on Saturday is our big ride. We have, after breakfast, we do a big trail ride. It's usually about 4.5 hours. And we all meet out for lunch at the same spot. And then in the afternoon, we're going to do the cattle sorting again when we get back. We'll do that for a couple of hours, and then we have our barbecue that evening, which is Saturday evening, and we do all of the barbecue and everything on Saturday up at the barn. We have a big barn dance, and we have a band coming, and we do hay rides in between the people playing music. So we have a lot of fun. It's a very good time, and of course Sunday we have, after breakfast, we have Cowboy Church. And then we have another a couple-hour ride that people go on before they leave. So we have a lot going on in a short period of time, but everybody is busy and everybody has fun.
That's fantastic. It's like, you know, everybody, load your trailer up and call Joanne and make sure you can get a reservation and head up there, because that sounds like too much fun. I've got to ask, tell me about the cattle sorting. So what is cattle sorting for folks that may not know?
Well, cattle sorting is when you have a group of cows and you'll have them in the in half the arena, and then the caller will call out which cattle you. Well, you work in teams, and they will call out the number of the cow that you have to start with. So if they call out 1, then it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If they call out 8, then and usually we have 8 cows in there. And you have to sort by the number. So you have to get the 1 out through the gate first, and then the number 2 cow, and then the number 3. And in the meantime, you have one person watching the gate so that you get the right cow coming through, and the other person is sorting them to where they're trying to get the one with the right number to go through the gate.
Right.
It gets, you know, at first, you know, a lot of times the cows will just run right through you. And so it's working, you know, it's your horse learning to work with the cows. You don't want to, you know, you want to do it in a slow manner to where you can try to pick out the cow you need to go through. Because if a number goes through that isn't in the sequence that it needs to be, then you're automatically disqualified. And then you have a, you know, you have someone that's timing you, and then you find out how long it takes to get, you know, those cattle through the gate, and that's how you, you know who's going to win that particular thing. And usually we'll have 10 to 12 teams that do it, and then we switch up the cows so that once the first group gets a little bit tired, then we have fresh cows coming in. So it's really it's a fun thing to do. It's a fun thing to do with your horse, especially if you haven't done it before. It gives them something else to do besides just trail riding. It gets them
right.
Riding something else, and I think the more you can do with your horse, the better horse you have. So.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and I imagine that it can be kind of amusing too to watch some of this going on.
It is. We actually have a lot of people that don't maybe locally that come just to watch it, and it is a lot of fun. There's a lot of hooting, hollering, and we have some really good call judges on it, and we make it a lot of fun. It's a good time.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, what kind of challenges do you have on the Trail Challenge course?
We have a teeter totter, which is a bridge that will go up and down on each end. We have several different ribbons that come down like a gate. We'll have there's an obstacle in the water that you have to go through. We have a bridge that you have to go through in there. And we have an L. It has four different turns where you have to go in, ring the bell, and then back your horse out without touching the sides of the logs. We have really big, like, dozer tires in there that you have to go over, and you're judged on how your horse and you handle every obstacle.
And then
we have a big bar that you pick up, and you have to pick the bar up with the rope and then carry it around and then set it back. So there's just obstacles like that. There's a real steep hill that you have to come down. You go up and then you have to come down several steps that you climb. Just a lot of really neat things that, you have to think about it and your horse needs to think about it. And that's really fun to watch, too. We have a bunch of people that watch that on lawn chairs, and that's a good time also. So.
Yeah, well, it's just fun. I mean, everything going on at Brushy Creek is just a whole lot of fun. So where can people find you online?
They can go to brushycreeklodge.com. It's www.brushycreeklodge.com. They could go to Valley Springs Foxtrotters. We also have our website on that site. And that's how they can call us. And our phone number is 573-269-4600.
Okay. And a great staff. You've got a great staff up there.
Yes, such sweet
people, so helpful. And good food and a real family atmosphere and a lot of activities and you can participate in some or all or just get out and enjoy the trails and just have a great time with some wonderful folks up there. And do you still have room for a few folks this weekend?
We do. We have some. We have Primitive and we have probably we have a few water and electric sites available yet too. So we would sure love to have you all come.
All right, well, don't wait. Get on the phone and call and head on up to Black, Missouri and just have a great time and meet Joanne. And, by the way, I think I saw in one of those videos that you've got on your website, you were out there doing some cattle sorting or something.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
We all love that here. It's a good training tool with horses, and it's a lot of fun. We really enjoy it.
All right, well, I look forward to getting up there and meeting you. And won't be this weekend, but before 2016 is over, I'm coming up to Black and to Brushy Creek.
That would be great, Gary. We would love to have you here.
Look forward to seeing you. Well, Joanne,
okay.
always always fun to have you on and talk about whether we're talking about the Valley Springs Foxtrotters or whether we're talking about Brushy Creek Lodge and Resort. It's a great place to visit, and you're always a great guest. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Gary. Have a great day.
You too. And when we come back, we've got just a few quick announcements, so don't go away. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
The evening shadows sway, and the night breezes sing to say, best weather in the day, riding neath the cowboy moon. Starlight in a desert sky puts a little twinkle in your eye. Couldn't get the blues if you tried, riding neath the cowboy moon. Give up all your worries, lose all your troubles and cares. Everything seems so much lighter in the nighttime air. Coyote and nightbird song, and your heart just wants to sing along. In this place where nothing's wrong, riding neath the cowboy moon.
Joining my co-host Bobby Jean Bell and myself on Thursday at noon Central Time, and we'll also be talking about the Mount Royal Trail Ride that's coming up, and I think that's the 10th anniversary, and Royal Wade will be performing, as well as another good friend of ours, Kristen Harris, for that event. So that show is this Thursday at noon. And then, as always, on Sunday, a great way to start your week is with Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale at 9 o'clock Central Time on Sunday mornings on Equestrian Legacy Radio with her great guest and great inspirational messages and music from the guests that join her on that show. Next Tuesday on Saddle Up America, we're going to be joined by Jim McGarvey with Backcountry Horsemen of America. And we're kind of doing things a little bit different with Jim and Backcountry Horsemen. We're talking about what's actually going on and what different states and chapters are doing to help keep these trails open and some of the events that they have. So that'll be next Tuesday at noon on Saddle Up America. We do want to remind you that Saddle Up America is brought to you by the great sponsors in the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the Western and equestrian lifestyle on our website at equestrianlegacy.net, and by Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. You can find out more about Trail Guard and their great services and enroll in their service at their website, trailguard.org. We also encourage you to visit our Legacy Select campgrounds, and Brushy Creek Lodge is one of those, but you can visit. I mean, this is the time to hit the trails, and so there's some great campgrounds all across the country that are part of our Legacy Select campgrounds, and you can visit them and plan your trip for this fall. Great trail riding out there. We have a sad note that we want to mention, and Tina May was not with us today. Yesterday, we were talking a little bit earlier in the morning, and her mother had been in the hospital this past week and seemed to be doing better. And then later in the day, I got a message from Tina May, and her mother passed away. And so we'll be posting arrangements for Tina's mother on our Facebook page later when those are finalized. But please keep Tina May and her family in your prayers as they're going through the loss of her mother. And it was unexpected. So keep her in your prayers as well. We've had a great show. Enjoyed having Rebecca on. Great, great information. We just didn't get to cover enough with her, so we look forward to having her back. And it's always a lot of fun to talk with Joanne Becker at Brushy Creek Lodge and Resort and Valley Springs Foxtrotters. And we look forward to having her back. And again, if you can make it up there this weekend, visit their website and go ahead and make a phone call and make your reservations. It sounds like a lot of fun and a beautiful weekend to do that as well. So we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. And we'll close the show today out with Buckaroo Man by Lili Robert. Thanks for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Feet on your ears. Wind blows the dust just like buckshot, and you never seen it rain much out here. Smell your own sweat in the evening. Wash up at the galvanized tank. Nearest town's 40 miles. The cook here, he don't smile, and all these young horses rank. But come a tie, I give the Isle of One, the back of your caballo. Go up at Taiwan home when you can. Your first, they don't ring much, you never did say much, but sure enough, you're a buckaroo man. Fingers stiff in the morning. By noon it's 103. 5-year-old slicks in the canyon with never a hint of a breeze. Jug-headed hollow-back ponies provide all with hours of grief. There's snakes in the shade, choy on the braid, and a half a ton of grit between your teeth. But come a tie, you be all one, the back of your caballo. You will be tired.